This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. A protest was held outside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul Monday, demanding freedom for dissident Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who's not been seen since entering the building a week ago and is feared dead.
Free Jamal Khashoggi!
Free Jamal Khashoggi!
Protesters chanted, "Free Jamal Khashoggi," and "Where is Jamal Khashoggi?" Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan Monday called on Saudi Arabia to provide proof he left the building.
Buradan bir an önce neticeyi almak durumundayız.
He said, "We must reach a conclusion as soon as possible." Mr. Erdogan said a police investigation is underway. President Donald Trump, when asked about the matter Monday, expressed his concern. Khashoggi left Saudi Arabia last year after being critical of Saudi policy in Yemen and its crackdown on dissent. He entered the consulate last Tuesday for documents related to his marriage, and his fiancée said he never came out. A Saudi source at the consulate denies Khashoggi was killed, but Turkish police are quoted as saying 15 Saudi nationals arrived aboard two planes entering the consulate at the same time. The case has alarmed Lynn Malouf of the rights group Amnesty International.
If the report of Jamal Khashoggi, if he was indeed assassinated, this would be an extrajudicial execution. This would mean that the Saudi authorities, MBS, don't even care about any semblance of a justice form, if you want.
Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman told Bloomberg News Riyadh is ready to welcome the Turkish government to search the consulate building, insisting there is nothing to hide. Eastern Libyan forces Monday captured a top suspected Egyptian militant on charges of orchestrating high-profile attacks, including a deadly ambush on police last year. Hisham al-Ashmawi, a former Special Forces officer, was apprehended in the city Derna by elements of the Libyan National Army. This is VOA News. Pakistan's Supreme Court has announced it has concluded its deliberations on the 8-year-old case involving a Pakistani Christian woman, Azia Bibi, who was sentenced to death under the country's blasphemy laws. She appealed the 2010 case to the High Court, but it has reserved its judgment. It did not indicate when it would rule. RAND Corporation South Asia analyst Jonah Blank said the court is under a great deal of pressure.
The justices have to be aware of the fact that Salman Taseer was assassinated for taking on her case and the case of other religious minorities. Likewise, there have been a number of other high-profile, even elite members of the establishment who have suffered intimidation, threats, and in some cases, assassination.
Bibi was convicted for allegedly making derogatory remarks about Islam after neighbors objected to her drinking water from a glass as a non-Muslim. Pakistan's new government is going to open talks with the International Monetary Fund, seeking emergency financial assistance to ease its balance of payments crisis. It's unclear how much Islamabad is seeking, but the finance minister has indicated the government may need at least $8 billion to cover its external debt payments through the end of the year. The Taliban insurgency in Afghanistan Monday called for a boycott of this month's parliamentary elections, demanding once again the withdrawal of all foreign forces as the only way to end the 17-year-old conflict. The statement came as U.S. Envoy Zalmay Khalilzad was in Kabul, seeking to engage the Taliban in peace talks. He's also scheduled to visit Pakistan and countries in the Middle East. Venezuela Monday said jailed opposition lawmaker Fernando Albán killed himself by jumping from a 10th-floor window at State Intelligence Agency headquarters. Exiled opposition leader Julio Borges said the country cannot continue with the violence, murder, and corruption of a failed state. He said Albán was subjected to pressure, including torture, to instill fear. The opposition First Justice Party, for which he served as a public official, said he was murdered. The U.S. Monday asked the International Court of Justice to dismiss a claim by Iran seeking to recover nearly $2 billion in national bank assets seized by U.S. courts. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled 2 years ago the assets must be turned over to American families of victims of the 1993 bombing of a U.S. Marine Corps barracks in Beirut, Lebanon, among others. The case is different from the more recent one brought by Tehran over U.S. sanctions, which the Trump administration has rejected. And Americans William Nordhaus and Paul Romer, pioneers in adapting the Western economic growth model to focus on environmental issues, sharing the benefits of technology, won the 2018 Nobel Economics Prize Monday. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon's government has condemned candidate Maurice Kamto for declaring himself winner of Sunday's presidential election.
For the first time, you have a politician who self-proclaimed himself for having been elected, which is completely in violation of the rule and regulation that governs the presidential election.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's information minister. African Union observers say Sunday's Cameroon election appeared to be fair. Sierra Leone's anti-corruption commission seeks the extradition of the country's former chief of immigration. New experimental drugs join the fight against Ebola. And Uganda celebrates 56 years of independence today, Tuesday.
Today, there's nothing so much to celebrate because we have gone back to the same struggle that our fathers fought against. We continue to be marginalized in our own country.
That's Ugandan parliamentarian Robert Chakulari, popularly known as Bobby Wine. A visiting UN official calls for 35% women participation in South Sudan's new government. And scientists warn that a catastrophic global warming is looming. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Cameroon's government has condemned candidate Maurice Kamto for declaring himself winner of Sunday's presidential election. Mr. Kamto, candidate for the Movement for the Rebirth of Cameroon, said he received a clear mandate from the people. He gave no results to support his statement. But at a news conference late Monday, Cameroon's information minister, Issa Chiroma Bakari, told Cameroon television that Kamto's claim of a victory was illegal and a violation of the constitution.
I just want to call your attention to the fact that there is a threat at home, because for the first time you have a politician who self-proclaimed himself for having been elected, which is completely wrong, in violation of the rule and regulation that governs the presidential election. The only body entitled to proclaim the result is the Constitutional Council. The election took place yesterday, and today early in the morning, they decided to say that he is the winner of this competition, which is very much difficult to understand, very much difficult to accept. Unfortunately, it is unwise to describe here the measures which are already taken and which will be implemented in case any need be. But I invite you as a citizen and lover of your nation to stand against this horrible statement made by a lecturer of university. This is very difficult to understand, even ridiculous. He knows the law, he's teaching the law, and he is the one who outlawed himself willingly. Measures will be taken. What are they? Well, by the efficiency, you will notice that they are already taken.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's information minister speaking at a news conference late Monday in Yaoundé. Meanwhile, Cameroon is counting votes after Sunday's presidential election, which officials and African Union observers described as largely successful. Authorities reported minor irregularities and some election-related violence, but said it was not enough to influence the outcome of the poll. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroonians returned to work Monday, a day after voting ended for the presidential election. While official results are not expected for 2 weeks, Cameroon's election authorities called the vote a success. Eric Esuse is Director General of Elections at the election management body ELECAM. He says the vote, for the most part, went smoothly in both the English and the French-speaking regions of Cameroon.
Certain minor incidents were observed in a few polling stations caused by verbal abuse from one or two candidates who clearly sought here and there to disturb public order. Such abuses are not acceptable in our democracy of appeasement and tolerance.
More than 7,000 observers monitored Cameroon's election, including the African Union. Aten Kwesi Sedeodai Ahoni Zena is head of the AU Observer Mission.
Nous n'avons pas d'information de province qui a eu.
He says they did not observe any major incidents that could influence the results, even though there were reports of fighting in the restive English-speaking regions. Zena says although they did not send their observers to those regions, they monitored from a distance. Cameroonian authorities reported a priest and three separatists were killed a day before the election in the country's Anglophone region in clashes with security forces. Anglophone separatists want autonomous rule from the government in Yaoundé and had vowed on social media to prevent Sunday's election. With security high in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest and southwest, the separatists were unable to carry out their threat. Businessman Desmond Abefu from the English-speaking town of Bamenda says he voted despite the threat and is anxious to know the results.
The voting took place yesterday, and it's for the President of the Republic, so I can't wait for it.
President Paul Biya has ruled Cameroon for 36 years and is expected to win another seven-year term. Cameroon's fractured opposition was unable to rally behind a strong challenger to the 85-year-old leader. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Uganda is celebrating 56 years of independence today, Tuesday. The theme for this year's commemoration is Standing Tall as we celebrate the achievements of our 56 years of independence. The government of President Yoweri Museveni has been touting some of its achievements to include about 3,231 miles of paved roads, a new airport at Kabale, and electricity coverage in all district headquarters except for two. But for Ugandan parliamentarian Robert Chakwe, popularly known as Bobby Wine, there's really nothing to celebrate because Ugandans today are fighting the same battles that their forefathers fought to gain independence from Great Britain. Bobby Wine says Ugandans under President Museveni have been marginalized in their own country.
Today, there's nothing so much to celebrate because we have gone back to the same struggle that our fathers fought against. We continue to be marginalized in our own country.
The government of President Museveni has been talking about some of the achievements that it has made. But before I get to that, let me ask you, what do you mean by the people continue to be marginalized?
Ugandans fought for independence because they wanted inclusion in the political system. Ugandans wanted to paint their own picture of the future that they want. Up to now, they do not have that because President Museveni continues to shrink the political space in Uganda.
The government has been talking about some of its achievements. They talk about 5,200 paved roads in Uganda, a new airport at Kabale, electricity coverage in district headquarters. So is this something you can give the government credit for?
The government of President Museveni is talking about things that other governments happen to do in 5 years or less. It has been 32 years when Museveni and his government are in power, but it's shameful that they are talking about the usual things. I don't find any credit to give to Museveni's government because it's a corrupt government and it's a misrepresentation of Uganda.
You are kind of now the leader of the young people, or most Ugandans. What is your message on this Independence Day to the people of Uganda and the young people of Uganda?
My message to the people of Uganda, and especially the young people of Uganda, is that rise up and let us achieve what we have to achieve. We know very much that where we are is not who we are.
Let me ask you, Your Honorable, what happened now to your treason case? Where are we?
Well, the case was adjourned up to the 3rd of December. Ordinarily, this case is supposed to be dismissed. But because we are living under a dictatorship, the laws are not respected, and that is why the government finds it easy to do any kind of play around with the law.
Honorable Chakulayi, we thank you very much for speaking with us on this Independence Day of Uganda. And let me say, Happy Independence Day to you.
Thank you. Happy Independence Day to you too. We continue to strive for the real independence.
That's Ugandan parliamentarian Robert Kyagulanyi, popularly known as Bobby Wine, was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 9th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 15.5 minutes past the hour. The Sierra Leone Anti-Corruption Commission says it is seeking the extradition from Britain of its former immigration head, Khalifa Koroma. The commission says it has launched an investigation following allegations that Koroma illegally sold Sierra Leonean diplomatic passports to people who were not eligible to have them. Meanwhile, the ACC says it has petitioned Interpol to arrest Mr. Koroma, who was arrested for money laundering in the United Kingdom but released on bail. For more about the investigation, Patrick Sandy is spokesperson for the Sierra Leone Anti-Corruption Commission.
The Anti-Corruption Commission is conducting a series of investigations relating to the issuance of service and diplomatic passports, particularly at the time when he was head of the Immigration Department in Sierra Leone. So at a point in time, we wanted to speak to him, but he was out of the jurisdiction. So the commission worked with the Sierra Leone police, and we did a wanted notice asking for the support of the Interpol, that wherever he is seen or located, he should be arrested and then brought back to Sierra. But then a few days back, we understood and we are communicated to that he was located in the UK and arrested, but also on the allegations of money laundering in the UK, and then also for the matter he has in silence, for which is to answer questions too.
Patrick, are you saying that the former immigration head, Khalifa Koroma, the Anti-Corruption Commission in Sierra Leone, is working with the authorities in the UK to seek a possible extradition to Sierra Leone as part of your investigation?
Exactly so, because he has to come and answer to questions relating to passports that were issued to persons we believe are non-deserving, that are not eligible to receive service and diplomatic passports.
What do you say to some Sierra Leoneans who say that this is all part of an effort to demonize the previous administration, and particularly Mr. Khalifa Koroma, a move to tarnish his reputation and to make the former administration unpopular?
I will disagree with those people entirely, because the fight against corruption is impartial. The fight against corruption is in the interest of the people of this country. The Anti-Corruption Commission is an independent institution. And so what we believe we are doing is in the interest of the people of this country. If we don't have a case against anybody, we don't go after anybody. The commissioner has emphasized it, that what we are doing basically, we fight corruption in the past, the present, and the future. So it is not calculated at any section of the people of this country or against any political party. What we are doing basically is as a result of the allegations we receive.
Has other jurisdictions helping with your investigation to some of these happenings that you are taking a critical look at?
Yeah, once we asked for their support, I quite believe that we have been getting support from other institutions and then other bilateral organizations or maybe countries. One thing we should bear in mind is that the fight against corruption is global. There is the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, and Sierra Leone is signatory and ratified provisions of that of the UNCTAD. And by so doing, all countries that are as well signatories or members or state parties to the UNCTAD are bound by that instrument to support the fight against corruption.
Patrick Sandy is the spokesman for Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Freetown. Rwanda's Correctional Service announced Monday the disappearance of two prisoners who it said escaped from Mpanga International Prison in the south of the country. One of the escaped inmates is Boniface Twagirimana, first vice president of the FDU Inkingi, an opposition party which is not yet accepted by the Kigali government. He was arrested last September and placed in 1 year of provisional detention after being charged with creation of a criminal gang. The FDU Inkingi has called his disappearance suspicious and is requesting the Rwandan government for explanation. Yuji Uwimana has details from Kigali.
According to Hilary Sengabo, the RCS's spokesperson, they noticed the inmates were missing during the routine morning headcount. Gwanda Correctional Service identified the two inmates as Boniface Kwajirimana, who was on remand pending the completion of his trial. He was in prison for 1 year, charged with creating a criminal gang to destabilize Gwanda's security. He's the first vice president of FDU Ihingi. The second escaped inmate is Aimable Murenzi, a convict who has been serving a life sentence. Both men apparently jumped over the fence to flee the prison facility, though we are yet to identify how they managed to do so. There are signs that they jumped over the fence. The FDU Ihingi called this disappearance suspicious. It said that Mr. Boniface was detained in Magelagele prison with 8 other members of the party. FDU explains that he was picked by his co-accused to be sent to prison for what FDU Ihingi calls strange reasons. Mr. Anselme Mutuimana, the FDU Ihingi spokesperson in Kigali, says they are requesting further explanation because they don't believe the RCS's statement on this matter.
I can't believe that if Kwajiriman didn't know exactly Nyanza prison because he's been there only 4 days since 30 October this year.
To transfer him away from other, he was kept also away from the other prisoners in isolation. According to that, we also request the government to inform the family and also our party about the disappearance of whatever Kwajirimana, because it is not understandable until now.
Since Victoire Ingabire, the president of FDU Ihingi, was released on presidential mercy, she has always urged the government to free our political prisoners, citing that such imprisonments tarnish Rwanda's shining image in other sectors. There are other prisoners. There are 9 members of my party, including those with responsibility in the party. I urge their release and all other political prisoners. President Paul Kagame has said that his government will not be forced to work under pressure. He said this last month while officiating the swearing-in ceremony of new members of parliament. And you see some people say, no, we didn't ask for presidential mercy, or they free us because of pressure. Pressure here. The Correctional Service, in conjunction with other security organs, has launched the investigations to trace and re-arrest the escapees. The prison officials have appealed to the general public to report any sighting of the suspects. Early last year, 3 inmates, Kassien Hamhanga, Sibomana Kilenge, and Tewojene Batambalije, escaped from the same prison. They were re-arrested 6 months after, while the other 2 are still on the run. Ejen Wimana for VOA News, Kigali.
A top UN official visiting South Sudan is calling on the country's leaders to implement a provision in the revitalized peace agreement which grants women 35% of positions in the executive. The United Nations Under Secretary General and the Executive Director of the UN Women is calling on South Sudan leaders to allow women to meaningfully participate in the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement to end violence against women. Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Bumzil Mlambo Nchuka, while on a 3-day visit to South Sudan, says she is here to stand in solidarity with women to ensure that 35% of government positions and those in the peacemaking process are granted to women per the agreement.
They've revitalized the agreement now. It has to give us hope and dedication. We know that it's still not going to be easy, but we have to do our best to make it work. Because so much has been tried, so much pain, so many challenges, so many lives lost. We have to find a way of turning the situation around. We have to make sure that the quota for women is 35% is actually fulfilled.
Juka says she remains deeply concerned about the level of violence committed against women in South Sudan.
We think that we have to tighten up even ourselves as the UN in the manner in which we are responding. So we see an even much bigger role for DPKO, including increasing the number of women that are coming to the security forces.
By DPKO, Chuka is referring to the Director for Peacekeeping Operations. Chuka is encouraging South Sudanese to produce their own food in an effort to end widespread food insecurity. Chuka says UN women will continue to train South Sudanese women in entrepreneurship and leadership skills, and she reiterated the role of UN women in supporting the implementation of the peace deal. Chuka is urging civil society and activists and women's groups to identify competent leaders who can fill the positions granted to women as stipulated in the agreement. For VOA News, I am Wenny Sereno in Juba.
A new report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has warned that the world is heating up faster than predicted. If the pace of global warming is not scaled back drastically, the panel says climate-related risks to human well-being, ecosystems, and sustainable development will escalate to dangerous, irreversible levels. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Scientists of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report global warming since pre-industrial times already has exceeded 1 degree Celsius. At the current rate of greenhouse gas emissions, it says the level of warming will reach 1.5 degrees during the next few decades. The report says the world needs to reach zero net emissions of carbon dioxide by 2050 to prevent a further rise in temperature. It warns a further increase to 2 degrees Celsius would greatly escalate the number of natural disasters, accelerate the melting of the Arctic sea ice, cause islands to disappear under rising seas, and make it impossible to produce enough food to feed the world's growing population. World Meteorological Organization Secretary General Petteri Talas says there is still time for people to change their behavior to keep carbon emissions from rising. He says preventing the global temperature from going up by 1.5 degree would make a huge difference in the well-being of the planet.
One of the major issues is that there would be 420 million people less suffering because of climate change if we would be able to limit the warming to 1.5 degree level. And we have certain areas in the world which are extremely sensitive, small island states, Mediterranean region, and also sub-Saharan Africa, which are already suffering and will suffer the most in the future.
Talas recommends several actions governments and individuals can take to lower the world's temperature. He says fossil fuels, which are the greatest emitter of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, must be phased out. He says solar power, hydropower, wind power, and other forms of so-called green energy are available to meet people's energy needs. He says more emphasis should be placed on using electric-powered public and private modes of transportation. He tells VOA people can help save the planet by changing their lifestyles. He points to diet as one area that could lessen the problem.
For example, the fact that we eat so much meat means that we are using a fairly large fraction of our agricultural land for the cattle instead of producing vegetarian food that it would be more carbon friendly.
Talas says governments have a 30-year window in which to stop using fossil energy and limiting global warming at 1.5 degrees Celsius. He says this is not impossible, but agrees that it is a major challenge. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that's it for this Tuesday, October 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, I'm Lino Ormudu, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we'll discuss the burden of poor quality health systems worldwide and what can be done about it. Our guest is Dr. Margaret Crook of the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. the U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.